Welcome to episode 117 of The Culture Clash, your home for fandom news, reviews, and I would say normally whatever crazy stuff Kevin and I could think of, but I think we're both still a little drowsy from our naps during the big game yesterday.
Pizza coma.
How many pieces of pizza did you have, Reitzel?
It wasn't just the pizza, it was like the garlic breadsticks that I also got with it.
Well, where'd you get? Wait, where did you get your pizza from?
I got it from Papa John's.
Wait, he's no longer the official pizza of the NFL. You shouldn't be getting that if you're watching the Super Bowl.
The one that we go to is individually or has an individual owner, and those guys have been good. They make good pizza.
Okay,
well, I've had Papa John's elsewhere, and I like these guys.
So. Okay, well I'll let you ride with that. But you know, I what a snooze fest, huh?
Dude. Okay. Let me just say right now. I fell asleep in the third quarter and just kept on sleeping. I watched a little bit of Game of Thrones. I mean, actually, that's what I did during the halftime thing. I'm like, I don't want to watch Maroon 5.
You didn't miss anything.
No, I know. I actually I DVR'd it, and I was like, I saw some of the lowlights. But I actually started watching Game of Thrones, and that was more entertaining. And then it was like still 3-0 in the third quarter. I'm like, okay. And then I woke up like hours later and went back to bed.
Okay, so here's the thing about the halftime show, just real quick. If you watch it and you look in the audience, it's all young women except for the male security guards. And they all have like this look on their face like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
And I really did not need to see an Adam Levine striptease. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So. I think the only highlight for me was the national anthem. Was it Gladys Knight? Is that who did it?
Yeah, and she even made that controversial because of how she sang the anthem. The all the people who had the prop bet of how long the anthem would be, because she said brave twice, they had to honor on both sides.
Oh, jeez. Everyone bets on everything. It's so funny.
It's quite nuts. You know, I was at least hoping with the halftime show that maybe Christina Aguilera might make an appearance. She did sing with them on that Moves Like Jagger song. I thought maybe, you know, they have the relationship from The Voice, all that. I was like, well, you know, maybe she'll, but nope. So, yeah. Well, Kevin, we do have other things to talk about. We even have a few Super Bowl commercials to talk about, at least a couple.
Yeah.
So, but without further ado, unlike the Super Bowl where it was, let's maybe do something, we're here to definitely say, let's do this thing.
This is the Culture Clash.
Again, it's Culture Clash 117, your home for fandom news, reviews, and crazy stuff Kevin and I can come up with. And if you want to find not only Culture Clash, but all the great shows here at the Fandom Podcast Network, it starts at our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com. You can also use your mobile device and use the Podbean app. Just search for the Fandom Podcast Network. You can also search for the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play for you Android users, and of course, our most recent place is now Spotify. Of course, you can visit our homepage, but our Facebook page, Fandom Podcast Network, and you can email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com if you have anything you'd like to throw to us, questions, opinions, whatever. You can also visit our Instagram page at Fandom Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can follow me, Kyle, on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. You can follow Sleepy over here, Mr. Kevin Reitzel, on Twitter at and Instagram at where, Kevin?
Spartan_Phoenix.
Come on, the game is over. Wake up, Kevin. Wake up.
Sorry, Spartan_Phoenix, Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah. Of course, and if you need your proper Fandom Podcast Network gear, you can always visit our TeePublic store. Go to TeePublic.com/Fandom Podcast Network. It'll take you to our great store page where there's logos for all the great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network. And of course, we love reviews, especially on iTunes. So hop on iTunes, give us a review. We love the 5-star reviews, of course, but we love the feedback in general. That Super Bowl really put a number on you, Kevin.
Yeah. I had to be up early for work too, but I don't know.
Wait a minute, you went to bed at halftime.
Yeah, pizza coma.
No, pizza coma's out of... Unless you... Did you have leftover pizza for dinner?
Yeah, I did have leftover pizza.
The truth comes out, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I mean, are you too much of a coma to feel it? Do I need to do it this week?
Yeah, you do it this week.
It's going to be a long podcast for me, ladies and gentlemen. But you know what? Let's news!
Let's news!
Okay, Kevin. It is technically our Super Bowl episode of Culture Clash, even though probably most of our listeners aren't here to talk sports. But what we do talk about is the Super Bowl ads, usually a highlight of the game. But Kevin, a couple things this year. One, obviously, it was a very boring game. Not a lot of great ads. And a lot of these ads are ending up like movie trailers now. They're hitting the internet before they're even the game even comes out.
Yeah, with the exception of the Avengers little teaser that we got, but we already got the Hobbs and Shaw, you know?
Yeah, well, and we're going to talk about that in full trailer in a little bit.
Yeah.
But
we did get a Captain Marvel, right?
We got a Captain Marvel. We got that short Avengers. We got a Toy Story.
I didn't. That must have been when I was sleeping.
Yeah, that was at the very end of the game, actually. So, but okay, Kevin, for what you were awake for, what were some of the standout commercials for you? Because I think we agree on this for the most part.
The Jason Bateman elevator, was it Hyundai?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I was kind of almost thinking they were going with like a Seven Levels of Hell kind of thing.
Right. That was very clever. But the one standout one was the Bud Light Dilly Dilly / Game of Thrones crossover, and that was the best one.
Oh, that was so well done. I don't know if I'm gonna call it the best one though, Kevin. But
what?
We'll talk about that in a second. But this one is if it's not the best one, it's 1A because. When you have the Bud Light man, let's put a keg in, let's tap this keg in the Bud Knight, and then he's just clobbered, and then we see it's the mountain, and he actually crushes his helmet like beer can.
As Cersei would say, Sir Grega.
Yes, Sir Grega. And then to have the dragon show up, I was almost kind of wondering afterwards, is this the end of the Dilly Dilly ads?
I know, right? Yeah.
I think a lot of people were real happy to see that.
Yeah, I still find them entertaining, you know. Yeah.
All I know is Bud Light spent a lot of money in Super Bowl advertising this year.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But the other one that I thoroughly enjoyed was the NFL 100 commercial. Did you see this one, Kevin, or were you asleep?
No, I was sleeping during that one.
This is the one you got to go online and check out. They're at a banquet getting ready to celebrate the...
is that the one with Marshawn Lynch?
Where he reaches into the cake?
Okay, yeah.
And
I heard that Marshawn Lynch was in some.
Yeah, no, he reaches into this cake while Roger Goodell is talking, and there's a big gold football on top of the cake, and he's trying just to get a little frosting, and he kind of loses his balance. His whole hand goes, causing the ball to fall off and the fumble to begin. And they have players that are still alive that have played from every decade. You've got Dick Butkus in there, Jim Brown, Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, current players like Alvin Kamara, Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson. It's a great commercial directed by Peter Berg.
Oh, okay. Was there any other Raiders in that one?
I'm trying to think. I think there was, I think Bo was in that one maybe.
Okay. So, I like Peter Berg.
Yeah.
Director of Fire Night Lights and many other films.
Oh yeah. The Rundown. Always a good one. So that I think that was really good. And there was another one I actually kind of enjoyed. I before you fell asleep, you might have seen this one. The Audi commercial. Where the guy walks up and there's his grandfather in like this old Field of Dreams type house. And he takes him into the garage and unveils this new electric Audi that's all fancy and stuff. And the next thing you know, it's like it flashes back and he's in some office cube somewhere and he's getting the Heimlich maneuver because he was choking on a cashew.
Is that the one that's coming out in a few years?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's...
Yeah, okay. I remember that one now, yeah.
That's the one. Of course, we did get, like I said, Captain Marvel, short Avengers trailer. And I got to comment on this because I've heard people kind of going, I wish there would have been more. Why wasn't it? I'm like, a couple things. I don't want to see big trailers for Avengers. It doesn't need to sell it to me. Just give me a little teaser to kind of whet my appetite. And that was perfect. How they did that trailer was perfect.
Yeah, I thought it was nice. I mean, I won't... mind a full length trailer later on, as long as, you know, we just get more of what we've seen, basically. And as I said, they're not going to tease anything. What was it, like 15 minutes into the film? They're not going to tease anything after that or something crazy like that, which I think is fine, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
But here's the thing, and I keep reminding people of this. They're not going to put out the quote-unquote epic Avengers trailer until after Captain Marvel, because they're not going to undercut Captain Marvel. They might trailer might debut before the day Captain Marvel comes out.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, but I didn't really, after that, there were some heartwarming ads. I thought the Xbox ad with the handicapped children talking about their new controller design for people with disabilities was actually pretty heartwarming.
The one that I thought was clever, I really liked, was the Twilight Zone Super Bowl ad with Jordan Peele.
I cannot wait for that on April 1st on CBS All Access. But yeah, that was a great ad that CBS did there.
Especially with it like pretending to shut, you know, the broadcast down, and that was pretty cool.
So, but nothing shuts down Tony Romo. You know this, Kevin.
Yeah, Tony Romo.
Probably the best part. Probably the Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
You gotta feel bad. Okay, the sports stand aside. Guy's famous for not getting to the Super Bowl. He finally gets to the Super Bowl and he gets to commentate the worst Super Bowl ever.
I know. Yeah.
He cannot catch a break. But let's talk about one of the trailers that we got a full trailer for of this movie before the Super Bowl trailer. And that is Hobbs and Shaw, the latest addition to the Fast and Furious franchise, Kevin. And this trailer might be ridiculous. It might be just so over the top, but it's in every good way possible.
Yeah. Now, just to clarify, the one that was in the Super Bowl was not the full trailer.
Yeah. Obviously, they had to edit it down and edit out a particular lip reading moment at the end of that trailer.
Oh, yes. Sign me up. I mean, I love the Fast and Furious films. I don't care how ridiculous they are. And, you know, it's got Idris Elba in it as well, playing the bad guy, of course. And but the thing that's what I find interesting is what spawned from fandom after seeing this one is the Justice for Han hashtag Justice for Han.
That was even a talk in the last Fast and Furious film.
What's that?
That initially kind of started during the last Fast and Furious film.
Yeah, but it's gaining steam now, you know, because, like, you know, it's Shaw here that killed him, or at least they revealed that after the Tokyo Drift film there. But I'm all in for this. I love this duo, and it just looks like a lot of over the top fun. I'm really, really excited about this. I'm more excited about this than a lot of other films coming out, with the exception of, John Wick and Avengers, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Again, it's going to be that over the top silliness, but it's going to work so well with these two. I mean,
you know what? Okay. I think it epitomizes what a fun popcorn summer movie should be. You know?
Yeah.
I mean?
I think that's a fair assessment. So
yeah.
Now, moving over to the TV side of things, it's been an interesting week because a lot of shows are already getting announced for renewal, and it's a little bit early, but, like, I know that the CW announced renewing all the DC shows, and Supernatural's getting renewed for a 15th season, Kevin.
I thought it was on its 57th season or something.
Yeah, you know, it'll still be, it's about to hit that point of, like, Twinkies and cockroaches. But there's a couple comic book related shows that just today got some news on them, both on FX. The first one, and this doesn't come as a shock to me considering the state of Marvel properties, FX is ending Legion, which is an X-Men spinoff TV show, after the third season.
One and done?
No, they've had two seasons already. Upcoming is the third season.
Oh, okay.
Now, and I'll be the first to admit, Legion is out there. It is a very bizarre show. It's one of those shows, think of it like Twin Peaks. If you don't watch it with your full attention, you're going to be totally lost.
Yeah.
So you've got that, but they're replacing it with a show that I have been waiting a long time for, because this is one of my all-time favorite comic book stories, and that is the Brian K. Vaughan comic, Why the Last Man, has been ordered to series by FX. This is actually a DC comic out of their Vertigo line, which was kind of more of their alternative adult line.
What is Why the Last Man?
Okay.
And Y as in the letter Y.
Okay, it is Y as the letter Y. The show will be shortened to just Y when it comes out on FX, but the basis of Y the Last Man is a virus comes out and it basically destroys the male population, all except for this one character.
Oh, like Y chromosome.
The Y chromosome, by the name of Yorick Brown. And so he's become like the most valuable commodity on the planet. The only other living male of any species that they know of at this point is a monkey he has by the name of Ampersand. Now, okay. Yorick is kind of a weird guy. He's a magician. He's a, you know, like a street magician and not doing like real fancy tricks, kind of a little off. But this was just such an incredible comic book series. I think it's up to, I think it, when you get the collections, it's like 9 different graphic novels, again, written by the great Brian K. Vaughan. Absolutely epic comic book series. I'd recommend it to anybody. And if going to FX, FX is a channel that I feel could do it right. I mean, they have a little bit more freedom than like an ABC or an NBC, maybe not quite the freedom like an HBO does, but FX has been known to push the envelope. You look at like Justified and Sons of Anarchy. So I'm not worried about this show being on FX.
Gotcha.
So I'm very excited about this. But there's a little interesting news that I caught just kind of going through things because it was a bit of a slow news week. This always happens during Super Bowl week. Nobody wants to put any news out because everybody's scared of the Super Bowl. But this was interesting. Keanu Reeves was almost Marvel Universe bound, Kevin.
I heard.
Now, he was looking at possibly playing the role of Yon Rogg, which is being played by Jude Law in Captain Marvel. But because of scheduling conflicts with the filming of John Wick 3, he was not able to do this.
That's right, because he has to finish John Wick 3. Yeah, that's right.
However,
most important role.
Yeah. However, I have heard rumors that his relationship with Marvel could still commence because Marvel has, there are rumors, and these are, again, these are clickbait rumors at this point, but I think when you talk Marvel stuff, there's always a little hinge of there could be something there. And that is, Keanu Reeves might be in line to at least be the voice of the Silver Surfer in an upcoming project.
I support him coming into the MCU. That would be great because, you know, now they are getting into the, I guess, Fantastic Four and X-Men world now, right?
Yep. So we've got that. One other thing, I didn't put it in the notes, Kevin, as far as comic book related movies, is it is official. James Gunn will be the director of Suicide Squad 2. I think we all have seen this coming when he was brought on.
That was rumored a while ago. Yeah.
I mean, he was already working on the script for Suicide Squad 2. I think he's actually a great director for the Suicide Squad.
I think so too. And I like the first one a lot. And so having that James Gunn kind of feel and script treatment, I think will be even better. So that'll be really cool. Do we expect the surviving members all back?
Well, I would think you at least will have Will Smith's Deadshot and Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn back. After that, I'm not quite sure. But that's one of the things about the Suicide Squad, that it's a group that's just always constantly rotating members.
Okay.
So, and one last little news, but this is just something kind of fun. Kit Harington, a.k.a. Jon Snow, apparently can't keep his mouth shut when it comes to the finale of Game of Thrones. He was sleeping on the couch for a few days at home.
That's right. His wildling wife, Rose Leslie, got a little pissed at him.
Yeah, he spoiled the finale of Game of Thrones to Rose, thinking, oh, well, she was on the show. She probably knows already or something like that. And apparently, afterwards, she didn't talk to him for about 3 days because she was so mad he spoiled it.
So he's in the same dog corner that a certain Spider-Man was.
Yeah, exactly. But I just saw that and I thought that was a fun story.
That is a fun story. And I got to tell you, I've been, as you guys have heard, I've been powering through Game of Thrones right now. And I'm on, I've reached season 7 right now. And it's fascinating to look back on all these episodes and how some seeds have been laying. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff I didn't remember and missed and stuff. And forgetting how exciting season 7 is, because I'm at the episode right now where Jon Snow has met up with the Lady Dragon,
Daenerys.
Daenerys, and they're talking about their their alliance together and stuff. So yes, this is really cool. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, Game of Thrones, I think, is going to be one of those series. It's great now, but when people do a full retrospective rewatch afterwards, it's just going to go up even another level because there's so much, like you said, there's so many things you catch with every rewatch. You don't catch. I've rewatched the run about 3 times now in my, and each time I always pick up on something little that I never picked up on before.
Yeah, and when I was committed to doing a rewatch, this is my first rewatch of Game of Thrones all the way through. I was a little apprehensive because I thought there might have been some episodes where I'm kind of like, whatever. And I just want to get to the good ones that I like. But surprisingly, I stayed on board through every episode, and because I got something almost out of everything. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute, that episode's coming up. And House of Frey, oh, he's going to get his, and blah, blah, blah. And so it's been a very fun rewatch, and definitely not tedious, definitely not boring. Quite fascinating, actually.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now, because it was Super Bowl weekend, really nothing hit the theaters. A lot of stuff was on reruns on television. So there's really not much to discuss in buy it, stream it, or unsee it.
Well, hold on. There is a movie that I do want to see that has caught my attention, but I just haven't gotten around to it. It's forgetting the name of it, though. It's the woman that gets captured by like the cartel, and then she like takes control and gets revenge.
The new Gina Gonzalez film.
Yeah, I do kind of want to see that.
As like good. Lady Bella or Miss Bella or something like that.
Yeah. I do kind of want to see that.
Yeah, I do want to see that too. But, again, they don't really open up a lot of movies Super Bowl weekend because they know everybody's kind of focused on that. And like I said, even TV shows don't put out a lot of new episodes. I spent my Saturday kind of more catching up on shows I needed to catch up on, like a lot of the DC shows and a few other shows I like Suits and stuff like that. One thing I did watch, though, is I finally got around to watching the first episode of Deadly Class on Sci-Fi.
Oh, yeah. How is that?
Very good. Kevin, you definitely need to check out because it actually takes place in the mid-80s.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's very hardcore, so yeah. But there was something with Buy It, Stream It, Unsee It this week I did want to talk about, Kevin, because it's an article you tag me in on Facebook regarding a movie I'm very excited about, which comes out Valentine's Day, and that is Battle Angel. And it talks about how it's already projected to be this huge bomb.
Yeah. Which I don't really quite understand. I don't think a lot of people have seen it yet, but let me read the first part of this. It says the costly Alita Battle Angel will now show little life or will show little life at the box office, according to industry experts. I don't know who industry experts are. As reported by The Wrap, independent tacklers estimated the manga-inspired action sci-fi directed by Robert Rodriguez and penned by producer James Cameron will open to a 5-day total no more than $25 million against its reported $150 to $200 million budget. Analysts further expect the Fox-backed Alita to tap out domestically somewhere between 45 to 50 million. Despite those dire numbers, Alita will benefit from its shift away from the crowded holiday movie-going season where it would have opened against Mary Poppins, Bumblebee, and eventually the $1.1 billion grossing Aquaman. It's not looking great, but by moving it to Valentine's Day, they gave the film a bit more runway to make some money against the Lego Movie 2 and How to Train Your Dragon 3, which aren't direct competition, according to boxoffice.com analyst Daniel Loria. If Alita tanks, it would be the second commercial failure for Fox in just as many weeks after The Kid Who Would Be King failed to be crowned a winner at the box office. This film, which cost a reported $60 million, could lose $50 million as the first bomb of 2019. And then it goes on to talk more about that. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, I have some thoughts here, Kevin, because
wanted to get your thoughts on this because I'm like, wow, I just hate this type of reporting.
I do too. I think it actually turns people off from me who might even be somewhat interested in the movie because they're like, oh, well, it's going to tank. Here's the thing. One is obviously I'm sure they're going on pre-ticket sales. And I think this is in a way a bit of a solo effect that's hitting this movie. And the comparison I'm using is this. Remember, Battle Angel was actually supposed to be out last July. And then it got moved for reshoots. Then it got moved again to be away from the holiday season. You start moving a movie like that, it starts picking up buzz. Oh, what's the problem? What's going on here? And then people kind of start to turn on it in that aspect. You also deal with the fact that, I mean, truth of the matter is, except for the anime fan base and the comic book fan base, not a lot of people are familiar with Battle Angel and the concept of it. And that, you know, it's a shame because it's a great manga. It's one of the all-time best manga that's ever been done. But I think
Is it manga or manga?
Manga. A manga, actually, for the books.
Okay.
And you've got it such, I mean, you've got a couple of Academy Award winners in this film. You've got, obviously, you got three, I believe. You have Mahershala Ali, Jennifer Connelly, and why am I blanking his name? The guy from...
You seem to think... I'm looking at my Facebook responses from my friends on Facebook regarding this article, because that's where I posted it. Before I get into what others are saying, you're saying that it will make big money overseas.
This is going to be Pacific Rim, as far as that goes. I truly do believe this. This movie is set up to be Pacific Rim, where Pacific Rim did all right in the States, not really that great, but when it made huge money overseas. And James Cameron does incredibly well overseas. And let's not forget, James Cameron is a producer on this film, along with Robert Rodriguez.
Some of the quotes that some of my friends said, my friend Thomas Block said, maybe it's too similar to this movie. And that is the recent Ghost in the Shell, where you got familiar with it. So people do want to see it.
Exactly what you're thinking.
PG-13 rating could hurt it. What my friend Ray said, never heard of it before. And then this is interesting. My friend Scott said the main character has no resonance. The whole movie looks formulaic and the effect of Alita's face is very much Uncanny Valley. This is what Scott said, as others have mentioned. I'm not sure what he means by Uncanny Valley. Do you know what he means by that? Okay, Scott, you need to, if you're listening to this, you need to explain that. So I don't know. Jason Howell says, I read the manga a long time ago and remember enjoying it. So I don't, is it just not hitting a chord with people? I don't know.
I think it's not hitting a chord with people. I think the moving of it really didn't well with people. Again, this movie's going to do huge numbers overseas. I have little doubt of that. But I'm not expecting sequels of this film. I think this is going to be one of those movies like Solo, where I think word of mouth is going to... The people who are going to go see it are going to give it strong word of mouth. It's been getting good reviews. The early reviews have not been raving about it, but they're saying it is a very solid, great action-type film. I think it's going to be a word of mouth film. I think it's where you're going to really see it make money in the States, at any rate, is when it hits the DVD market, the digital market, things along that nature. I've been excited for this movie for a long time. There's so much creative talent with this. But again, I think it's one of those things, again, Kevin, in the days of social media, very much like Solo, even though there was other things contributing to Solo, but the aspect of we're always here when there's problems on a film, oh, it's been moved, oh, it's getting reshooted, blah, blah, blah. And it becomes such a negative towards that movie before it even comes out. And I think that's what's happening here with Battle Angel in this aspect. Because I think if it didn't have that, there'd be a lot more buzz and excitement about this film when you consider the creative talent that's in it. So I'm going to say this. Go see it. I'm promising you it'll be unlike anything you've ever seen. And, you know, you want to talk about that comparison to Ghost in the Shell, you can't compare the two. This is such a stronger cast. This is a stronger creative minds behind this. And there's a lot more money put into this than there ever was in Ghost in the Shell. So, and in truth, Ghost in the Shell is not that bad of a movie. It wasn't what it could have completely been. And that's, I think this will be everything it could have completely been. Maybe some other issues, but I'm looking forward to it. But now, Kevin, last week we introduced a new segment.
Yeah, but should we do like a little station break first?
Yeah, you probably should. You might need another Pizza Coma nap.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, we'll be right back after a little promo telling you about everything here on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture.
For you Highlander fans, we've got Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we cover all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater is for you movie buffs, our podcast celebrating the cult classics and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. We also have End Zone for you NFL fans, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with host Tom, Brandon, and Chris discussing the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. And for you Star Trek Discovery and Orville fans, we have Discoville, talking about everything Discovery and the Orville. And for you hard rock music fans, we have the Hair Metal podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And we also have Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where we discuss all things Doctor Who, both past and present. And our newest podcast, Lethal Mullet, our podcast celebrating action movies from the 1980s with your host, Adam P. O'Brien. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now on Spotify. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
And welcome back. Now, Kevin, as I was saying, we introduced a new segment last week. A little.
Yes, we did.
Cult classic or guilty pleasure. And you kind of tied that in with your Raider Nerd poll for the week.
I did. I wanted to get our friend's take on the two movies that we put up for cult classic or guilty pleasure. Yours was Hackers, the 1995 film. Mine was a 1993 film, Super Mario Brothers. And not a big surprise here, but they pretty much agreed with us for your Hackers. Cult classic status won over guilty pleasure, 65% to 35%. So yeah, what do you think of that?
That seems about right. And it was running a lot closer than that for a little while, if I remember early on in the poll. But yes. You know, that doesn't surprise me. A lot of people brought up the soundtrack, and something I failed to mention. Hackers.
I totally forgot about soundtrack. That. What was in that soundtrack?
It was a lot of mix of the kind of the techno music of that time. A little bit of rap in there as well, but it was a really good soundtrack.
Okay. All right. Well, the as much as expected to for Super Mario Brothers, Guilty Pleasure won out over Cult Classic 66% to 34%.
And you know what? That finished closer than I thought, because at one point I was looking, it was like 80-20 Guilty Pleasure.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. Those are fun to go over. So yeah, I'm glad there was a definite like difference opinion on each of those. So yeah.
So we've got two more movies this week. Since last week I did my movie first, Kevin, why don't you do your movie this week? That your pick, is it a cult classic or is it a guilty pleasure?
So one thing that we need to mention here is, in at least according to Cars, for anything to be considered a classic, it has to be at least 20 years old. So we're going to try and pick films that are at least 20 years or older, correct?
Yeah, unless there's just something that's like, you know, maybe pushing 18, 19 years where it's just like, yeah. You know, there's a couple that come to mind with that, but we'll discuss that before we do it. But yeah, that the 20-year mark is kind of where we're trying to at least make the cutoff point at.
Because your pick was pushing it, but it qualifies. Yeah. So yeah. So my pick for cult classic or guilty pleasure is the 1993 film Sniper, starring Tom Berenger and Billy Zane, a U.S. Marine sniper, is partnered with a SWAT member to take out rebel leaders in the jungles of Panama. I really love this film. I remember seeing it in theater when it first came out, and I thought Tom Berenger was great. And this this movie has gone on to do like 4 or 5 sequels, I think. And I think most of all of them starring Tom Berenger, to be honest yeah. with you. This has kind of become his franchise, which I think is great, you know. And I've seen most of those sequels. They're not great, you know, but they're still like, you know, B movie entertainment, you know. But this, you know, this original one here though stands to the top. And so what is your take on Sniper? What do you think?
Okay, well, for me, Sniper, first of all, I never even heard of it till it came out on VHS. It never made the movie theaters in Alaska. So I remember when it came out, I rented it. It's definitely the most superior film, even if you combined all the other Sniper films together. This is still a superior film to those. I remember this was a time when Tom Berenger was kind of doing like A-, B-plus kind of movies. His star was definitely on the decline.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, he probably reached his pinnacle at Platoon. And of course, he was great in Major League and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And there was a lot of movies. Like, I think this was one of those part of like the VHS time when a lot of movies that really kind of picked up when they hit the video store more than they did the theaters. And I think Sniper was one of those films. I just don't know if I can call it a cult classic. I think I got to lean a little bit more towards guilty pleasure, because I think a lot of people, if you say Sniper, they might get it confused with another film.
Like what?
Well, I mean, there's so many military type movies that are close like this. And there was the whole Sniper phenomenon there for a while, especially not even that long ago.
Well, you had American Sniper based off the, you know, Bradley Cooper, and then you have Enemy at the Gates, you know, you have that one as well.
I would kind of put Sniper above, just a little bit above that Navy SEALs range.
Really? Okay. All right. So you're giving it a guilty pleasure nod then, right?
I am giving it a guilty pleasure. A good movie. Don't get me wrong. Personally, I do enjoy it. It's a very good movie, but I don't think it kind of has that notoriety that.
No, I see. I gotta be honest with you. I'm still struggling myself of what label to give this out of those two. Because I hear a lot of people talking about this film, you know, and they go, you know, that look back fondly on it to where it can fall under a cult classic. But if I had to choose, I would probably edge out with and agree with you that it is a guilty pleasure, Sniper. Yeah. It's tough though. I think so. I mean, I'd be curious to hear what others think about this.
Yeah. We want to hear your input on this. And I think there might be another Raider Nerd poll on this one. So I think my pick, Kevin, is going to get a lot of people talking too. And I have picked the 1996 film.
Guilty pleasure. Sorry.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We already know Kevin's thoughts, but I'm going to say it is definitely one of my all time. Guilty pleasure. Cause I think for a long time it was a guilty pleasure. And that is the 1996 film starring Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt. That is Twister. Now, we all remember when Twister came out. It was a pretty big deal. A lot, because at the time, Helen Hunt was really on the rise. She Mad About You. People were really following her from that. A lot of people knew who Bill Paxton was. And this is Bill Paxton's first time really carrying a movie like this in a leading role.
Yep.
So this was the kind of like the, what? You know, we're going to give Bill Paxton that chance now. And, you know, you had some other people in this. Let's not forget, this was a very movie very early on in the career of one Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie Gertz. I was going to say, Kevin, that should just make it an instant classic for you right there. But the thing I remember about Twister, and of course it was directed by John Dubon. Cary Elles was in this as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that most people got turned off by on Twister was what we will all call the completely unrealistic survival through these storms that happened in this movie. I think the science was kind of thrown out the window there. But a few other people were in this. Alan Ruck, of course, from Ferris Bueller fame, was in this film.
Mm-hmm.
You had Joy Slotnick, who's got a very interesting career. He's been he's one of those thing guys. Oh, he's one of those oh that guy actors. You see,
I think you need to read the IMDb story synopsis.
Oh, you think I should read the IMDb story synopsis?
I got it ready if you want me to do it.
You, why don't you go ahead? Because I know you're kind of dying to do it here. You got that smile going on your face.
Here we go. Here we go. TV weatherman Bill Harding is trying to get his tornado wife, Hunter, or tornado hunter wife, excuse me, Joe, to sign divorce papers so he can marry his girlfriend, Melissa. But Mother Nature, in the form of a series of intense storms sweeping across Oklahoma, has other plans. Soon, the three have joined the team of storm chasers as they attempt to insert a revolutionary measuring device into the very heart of several extremely violent tornadoes.
Yes. Hey.
Flying cow.
We have cows. There is so much that is just absolutely ridiculous, again, about the science of this movie and certain aspects, especially the final storm chasing scene, shall we say, where they're more like chased by the F5 tornado.
Right, right.
But I do think over time, this movie has morphed from a guilty pleasure to a cult classic. And the only reason, I'll give you two reasons for this. Bill Paxton Love. And I think people go back and look at this, also see the cast in this, and I think people, and let's not forget, this did start off that whole run of a popularity of storm chasing reality shows that has lasted even to this day. So I think while many consider it a guilty pleasure for a very long time, within the last few years it may have made that turn into a cult classic. Kevin, you sounded like you need to use the bathroom.
I love you, but you are so wrong, dude. Oh my god. Okay, so first of all, let's go back in time. You saw
this. I did see this in the theater, yes.
Okay, as did I. This movie had a lot of buzz about it. You hit all the reasons why. Bill Paxton, we love him, and the stars in it, blah blah blah.
Great Van Halen song in the soundtrack, by the way. Great. Sorry? Van Halen song in the soundtrack.
Which one?
Human's Being.
No, okay, whatever. Okay. So now this movie did well. It had a budget of 92. Opening weekend was 41. Gross, 241. Okay. So, but the reason why I disagree with you that this is a cult classic is because no one talks about this movie. This movie spiked so high back in the 90s. And then dropped way back down. And the only person that has talked about this film is you.
I don't look how it is a regular fixture on cable.
It may be, but it does not follow in my mind, it does not follow the path of a cult classic. No one is going back and talking about this film. It spiked and then died, just like a lot of films lately that get these big hypes when they come out, and whether they're a success or not in the theater, and then boom, they go back down and no one's talking about it. People have to keep talking about this. People have to say, oh, I like that movie, or, oh, let's talk about that film, or let's have a panel at Dragon Con about Twister. No, dude, this is full on guilty pleasure, dude. Sorry. This is not a cult classic.
I'll be curious to see what the Raider Nerd poll says.
I will do the Raider Nerd poll and we'll get back to you this week, but this is total on guilty pleasure. I mean, don't you see my point? It doesn't have the longevity enough in pop culture to even qualify for cult classic, if you ask.
I gave my reasons why I think it has, in the last few years, especially with Bill Paxton passing away, it's kind of changed it to a cult classic.
But there's other Bill Paxton films that people are talking about other than that.
I understand that. I mean, Bill Paxton's most famous role is still Aliens.
I just think those genre films, those disaster type, devastation type films are really, they're very spiky. They're very up and down. It really depends on what it is. I give Armageddon over this one when it comes to cult classic.
I would do that too, but I think Armageddon is even,
But I think this is all Kyle Cult Classic written all over it.
There might be some Helen Hunt bias in there too.
You know what? I'm not going to blame you there because she's a wonderful lady. She's beautiful, and this was like, you know, especially that whole Mad About
this
You.
This was like at her height of that.
Yeah, and what was the film she did?
As
she
good
won
the as
Oscar
it gets.
For Jack Nicholson. Was that was after?
Yeah,
this,
that was
right?
A couple of years. I think a year or two after this.
Yeah, yeah. So she was on a roll there, and she definitely
come on. You know, it did have Jamie Gertz in it for you, Kevin.
This is true. This is true. But she wasn't like, she was kind of she wasn't the cool Jamie Gertz though.
She was kind of the nerdy Jamie Gertz in this.
She's kind of like the annoying new girlfriend Gertz, I guess. I don't know.
So, well, Kevin, the Raider Nerd poll will be the final decision on both of these films.
Okay. I could be wrong.
We'll
see.
I could be put in my place. And I'll just live with it.
So you planning on what are you seeing this weekend?
I will be going to see the Lego Movie 2.
That's coming out. That's
and then
right.
I bought, that's like right. I said, I have bought my tickets for Battle Angel. And then, you know what? You realize we're not, by the time Battle Angel comes out, we're only a few weeks away from Captain Marvel.
Wow. Yeah. Jeez. I don't know if I've mentioned to the Culture Clash group, but I've, I don't know if I did it last week or not, but I've confirmed my trip to West Coast.
We talked about you going to Seacouver.
Yep, going to Seacouver, a.k.a. Vancouver. I'm going to be doing a little Highlander television series tour out there, and then I'll be meeting up with the lovely Aaron Gill out in California. I'm going to visit my dad and be out in Santa Barbara for a while, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, you know what, Kevin? Maybe not the longest Culture Clash, but I'm feeling Pizza Coma coming on and Super Bowl drainage still happening because it was that bad. I don't think anything saved that. I don't think even the great Bud Light, a Game of Thrones mashup, couldn't save that.
Let me ask you this. It seems like there's been a decline of good Super Bowl ads.
I think I
over
you
last
know what?
Several years. It seems like they've just lost the that which you watch Super Bowl for if it sucks type stuff. You know, it doesn't seem to be as good
as it
used to
be. Well, again, I think it's a couple of things. I think one is a lot of us were watching the Super Bowl for movie trailers, and now we get all those online before the game even is played. And this year, and the last couple of years, a lot of these ads have come out before the Super Bowl has even hit online. And
yeah. Yeah, actually, I'm glad you brought that up because I forgot to talk about one of the ads, and that was one of the things that kind of hurt the ad for me because it got spoiled, and that was the Carrie Bradshaw, the dude beer commercial.
There was one other guy in there that people are not talking about is the guy who used to be the most interesting man in the world was in that commercial as well.
Yeah. But the luster on that, was it the
Stellar
beer was,
Toast.
What was, or, yes, that totally lost its zip for me because it got spoiled online.
Well,
another
ad. Point with
the, if they wouldn't have said anything about it, that might've been a contender.
Yeah, another point with that ad though, was the marketing of it actually made a lot of people very angry because they made it appear like it was going to be Jeff Bridges coming back in a new movie as the dude. And then it turned out to be an ad, and that turned off a lot of people right there. They got very upset over that.
You mean like the Australian tourism ad last year that got us excited for a new Dundee?
Which we still need that movie, Chris Hemsworth. I'm just saying.
To quote Aaron Gill, not going to happen. You won't get all those people for that.
I beg to differ. If we can get Avengers, we can get Dundee.
That's yeah, I know. Why not?
If we can get Top Gun 2, we can get Dundee.
There you go. There you go.
So now I want to go back and watch those ads.
I don't.
Yeah, because I know it was painful for you, Kevin.
Yeah.
So, well, with that, Kevin and I are, like I said, he's going to go take a nap. I'm going to go take a nap. But we'll be back next week because we'll have some things we'll have seen. There'll be some new news. And maybe we'll have another Guilty Pleasure or Cult Classic for you. You never know what kind of crazy stuff we'll come up with. Just remember, everybody, respect each other and enjoy your fandom.